All right, chérie, the courtship is over. Oh, the adoration. Oh, je vous adore. You are my peanut. I am your brittle.
Hey, baby, I'm your favorite announcer, and this is the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I've just got to say, you look fantastic in that outfit. I was thinking, everybody's excited about this super game thing, but I'm already on to another holiday. You know the one, baby. It's none other than what I like to refer to as the Super Bowl of Love, Valentine's Day. Here to help me celebrate are three of the best-looking people in the business. Oh, yeah, you know, baby, from Afford Anything, the gorgeous Paula Pants. Heh, she's not all. Wait till you see the guy from Control Your Cash in these jeans. It's the one and only Greg McFarlane. And let's celebrate the retirement answer man himself, certified financial planner Roger Whitney. Light a candle, sugar, because that's not all we've got. Oh, no, baby. After that, we'll lather up and share a delightful treat called FreshBooks FinTech Segment, and a company I like to refer to as Card Cash. I know what you're thinking, baby, but I'm thinking it too. Discounts are so damn sexy. And now, the guy who never remembers how much I love these Godiva chocolates at Valentine's Day, Joe Saul Sehi.
Yeah, just what we need is Doug all sugared up. Hey, everybody, I am Joe Saul Sehi, Average Joe Money on Twitter, and it is Friday, big game weekend. And while we had our big game episode on Wednesday, today at halftime, we're talking about the love and making it less expensive for your Valentine's Day. So we're already looking out for your best interest, aren't we? I'll tell you a couple sites that are looking out for your best interest. If you head to StackyBenjamins.com, I am nothing but smooth with the segues, /SoFi, that's spelled S-O-F-I. You know what you're going to find? They are the leader in marketplace lending, especially when it comes to student loans, personal loans, and mortgages. So here's the way that that works. You go to StackyBenjamins.com/SoFi, S-O-F-I. It'll ask you which part of the site you want to go to, and then you fill in very quickly a little bit about you. And like our friend Dan Macklin over at SoFi says, takes just a couple seconds and they will give you everything about how you can work with them. You have a lot of different choices. If it's a fixed rate loan, if it's a variable rate loan, what term you want. So whether it's a consolidation loan to get the credit cards in order, or if it's a student loan to get rid of those regular student loans, plus parent loans, whatever, StackyBenjamins.com/SoFi. And the place where you can not only find SoFi, but you'll find 92% of the products that are out there that you use every day, StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. You know what's funny is that I was on Paula's podcast, the Afford Anything podcast, this last week, and we had kind of a long talk about Magnify Money. She was talking about, and I totally get this, that these are some of the little things, right? Having the right credit card, having the right checking account, having the right savings account. And she said, leave your brain power for the big decisions. I don't disagree with that. My feeling is, though, why would I not one time make sure that I have all that stuff right, and then the pennies just accumulate on their own so I can think about the big transaction? If you head to StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney, you'll find that you can have it both ways. Very quickly, find the best checking account, savings account, credit card, auto loan, whatever it is that you use, StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. All right, we got a fantastic show for you today. On Friday, we always change things up. We talk to some of the best minds around the financial blogosphere. And then in the middle of the show, we talk about new fintech. And that's what we've got in store for you again today. So ready? Here we go. All right. right, let's walk across the room here and fire up my dad's shortwave and see who we've got on the line. I believe in Las Vegas, we've got Paula Pam from Afford Anything.
I might be here, Joe. It's totally possible.
So do you like run back from the casino just for our call?
Yeah, this is the out of the 24 hours a day, this is the 1 hour that I am not spending at the roulette table.
Right. Well,
I don't eat. I don't sleep. I'm just gambling constantly. You know me.
It's all about free drinks, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm like 8 vodkas deep into the day by now. It's only 9 a.m.
Which is why you're so entertaining on the show. And another guy who's always entertaining on the show, halfway across the Pacific Ocean, it is Greg McFarlane.
That was a trick question because, as everybody knows, Paula, like every other Las Vegas resident, actually lives in a casino.
That's right. Does she live in the top of that castle, Camelot or Excalibur?
Absolutely. I live like in the window of Excalibur and kind of like Rapunzel. Whenever anybody wants to come into the casino, I have to let down my hair.
And a little known fact, Greg, when he's in Las Vegas, lives in the pirate ship at Treasure Island.
They actually got rid of the pirate ship, unfortunately. They rebranded it. Which I thought that ship sailed, if you'll pardon the pun, when they named it Treasure Island. But what right. do I know? Kind of like when Luxor wanted to get away from the Egyptian theme. It's a freaking pyramid with a Sphinx outside.
Are you kidding me? The Luxor doesn't have an Egyptian theme anymore?
No, it doesn't. Well, I guess getting rid of the Sphinx was too expensive, but every Egyptian branded thing inside has disappeared.
Yeah, that's amazing. And the guy who's wondering why he's here, sitting in for the one and only Len Penzo, it's the one and only Roger Whitney, the retirement answer man. Roger.
What I'm really wondering is why Paula would be playing roulette, one of the games with the worst odds in the casino.
No, in all seriousness, I don't play any, I don't gamble at all.
Oh, come on.
Except with my career, but I'm...
That's right.
Well, by being on the show, you're definitely gambling with that.
Exactly.
It's all downhill from here. Roger, thanks for sitting in here at the last minute. Len had a last minute thing, so Roger was my financial booty call, as it were. Tell everybody about the Retirement Answer Man for people that haven't heard you before.
It's just a little podcast where we figure out how to live independently when you're in your 50s.
And you're a certified financial planner in Fort Worth, Texas?
I am certified in about 4 different things. Yeah, right downtown Fort Worth, Texas, and just noodle on that subject every week on the podcast.
Right. Paul, his wife says he's certifiable too, so we're good. Yeah. Ba-dum-bum. All right, let's get into our 3 articles today. We might not have time for all 3, so I probably shouldn't have said that. But we'll start big. We'll go to our friend Jay Money site, budgetsaresexy.com. This piece was written by Mr. ERN, who runs the Early Retirement Now blog. And it's called My Top 7 Disagreements with Personal Finance Experts. And I think we're going to tear these off one at a time. The first thing he says, Greg, here is the 4% safe withdrawal rate is safe. And he says, no, it's not. The 4% rule. So, and what he's referring to, Greg, I guess, is that if you take 4% of the money out of your portfolio every year during retirement, you're able to take it out for the rest of your life. Do you agree with him there that that's not safe?
I don't know if it's not safe. I just think it doesn't apply to everybody. Percentages don't tell the whole story. Mark Zuckerberg, when he retires decades down the road, he doesn't have to worry about 4%, even if he lives to 120. It's not going to affect his ability to retire comfortably. So instead of blindly accepting a rule of thumb, however well it fits most people, look at dollar figures. In between now and retirement age, how much did my portfolio increase during the year in absolute terms, not relative ones? And how much will I need to live on year by year instead of playing amateur actuary and trying to figure out how long you're going to live once you retire?
Yeah, that's interesting, Paula. Greg's point of it's not that much harder to just do the actual legwork and use real numbers.
Wow, I love the term amateur actuary.
Yeah, that's good.
That's going to be my new band name. Now I just need to learn a musical instrument. Joe, I'm sorry, what was your question? I got distracted by my band name.
I just said, welcome to Paula and the
amateur actuary. She got distracted by my alluring alliteration.
As the author of Afford Anything, I really like alliteration that begins with the letter A.
Yeah,
did I mention my initials or PPP?
Your middle initials P also?
It is.
We learned something. How long have you been on the show and I didn't know that?
Would you like, completely off the rails here, would you like even more weird trivia about my name? When I was born, my middle name was my first name. A few years after I moved to the United States, when it became clear that nobody could pronounce my given first name, we tacked Paula onto the beginning of it legally, sliding my former first name into the de facto middle spot.
Well, now I got to know what it is.
I was going to say, Roger, aren't you glad you're here?
What are we talking about?
So the name I was given at birth was Pragya.
Ah.
When I was in kindergarten, everyone was like, pregnant? What's your name? And I was like, oh, I'm not going through the rest of my life like this.
Paula.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I like Paula.
Much
path
easier.
Path of least resistance there.
Well, how about if I give you the question one more time?
Sure.
Which is, I think what Greg's referring to is that instead of using this 4% rule, which the author of this article says isn't safe anyway, it's not that hard to just do the real numbers. You agree with that?
I do agree with that. I mean, so the Trinity study, which is where the 4% rule came from, was based on an assumed 30-year retirement, 30 to 40-year retirement. So we don't really have the numbers for, you know, what if people end up living for a very long time? What if you retire extremely early? But that said, I mean, humans are not going to robotically, as Greg said, humans won't robotically just withdraw 4%. You know, you can shift and make adjustments based on how much money you have, how much money you need to spend, and what's going on in your life. That's the great thing about being flexible, and flexibility is the only true security.
Well, and that's what Roger, I think this Mr. ERN, this blogger who wrote this piece said, is that longevity is the problem with a 4% rule. You seeing clients in any of the studies that you read showing people living a lot longer than 30 years now?
Well, statistically right now, if you're 60 years old, you have a 50-50 chance of living past 90, which is huge, 50-50. So that's where the median is. So people are definitely living a lot longer. And there's this false narrative of we need to know our number. What's our financial number? And I think the 4% rule is part of that. And it, you know, like Greg was saying, it's all a savings and investing mentality when it's much more multidimensional than that. So I think rather than whether the 4% rule works or not, it's really more about your balance sheet, how you spend, whether you're going to earn money, what Social Security is going to be. It's much more multidimensional than a simple 4% or what's your retirement number. Yeah, I don't use any of this stuff.
None of it. What do you guys use?
Me?
Yes.
I don't go by numbers. I go through looking at what their spending plan is and what kind of cash flows they have and what opportunities they have for income during retirement and using some of their portfolio to support some of that, whether it's rental, real estate, or business or something else. It's much more multidimensional than just simply put money in investments and withdraw money. That's that worked for the last generation. It doesn't work for this generation.
They also say in here, Greg, that his second objection is today's expected asset returns are significantly lower than the average returns observed since 1926, which means that, you know, we're looking at what, 10.2%? And he's saying that he doesn't think we should be looking at 10.2% going forward. True?
You could even argue that 91 years is a blink of an eye. It's hard to tell. I mean, throughout human history, the idea of a stock market, the idea of investing in securities or bonds or debentures or whatever just didn't exist. I don't know that we can apply trends given a time frame that is less than, in some cases, one human lifetime. And yeah, things change rapidly. My own retirement plan looks unrecognizable compared to my plan of my mid-20s, which was barely a plan.
I was going to say, you had a plan in your mid-20s? Mine was, what beer are we drinking on Friday night? That was pretty much it. I want to stick with you, Greg, because I've wondered as I was reading this piece, what you think about this, and I think it's a question I've never asked. His second objection is robo-advisors are great. He says they're great if you mean expensive. Regardless of what this blogger thinks, what's your opinion of the robo-advisor hotness right now?
I agree with pretty much every point in this article, except for the throwaway comment at the start about how full-size SUVs and large houses are symbolically indicative of too much consumption. Speaking of somebody who owns a full-size SUV and a large house, robo-advisors, this is delegation taken way past any logical extension. Just because you've chosen to automate every other aspect of your life, from your thermostat to your music selection, you still need to pay good old-fashioned brain power attention to your investments. and a couple of other things, maybe your health, maybe your kids. But yeah, a little fundamental analysis, actually perusing your investments as opposed to letting software handle it, letting an algorithm handle it, that doesn't hurt.
Roger, do you use robos in your practice?
No, not at all. And I agree. It's, you know, it, I think the attraction to the robo is the fancy technology. It's a cool tool and you get pretty charts when you do it. Because you can accomplish the exact same thing just by buying even a fund-to-fund ETF at a very low cost. I think iShares has some. So I think it's, you know, it's delegation and, you know, it's the Quicken effect. People want to be able to have the charts and see it dynamically move. And I guess to some, it's worth the little extra cost, but it's definitely not necessary.
I'm going to get letters, though, Roger, saying that we're underplaying like the other things robos do, like tax loss harvesting and making sure once every 6 months you rebalance, stuff like that. What do you say to that?
Well, a normal ETF, say a fund-to-fund ETF, just as an example, they're going to dynamically rebalance almost daily because they have cash flows coming in and out. And tax loss harvesting, you don't want to do it in a hard software program because there are a lot of different ways that you can nuance it. And at the end of the day, it's not as big a deal over time as long as you're, you know, especially in a passive investment environment.
Paula, I thought about you indexing. Robos, Paula's next thing.
No, I'm not a fan of robo advisors because they just seem like not a lot of expense, but they're certainly an unnecessary expense for what you get. You know, there are some robo advisors that will just buy a handful of Vanguard index funds on your behalf, but then charge you an additional fee on top of Vanguard's expense ratio in order for them to do it for you. And I just don't see that. The benefit that they give you is in any way better. I mean, if you really want to automate it, if you just want to set it and forget it, why not just get a target date fund? Seems to me that you would get a very similar benefit for a fraction of the cost.
Yeah, I mean, we're on record as saying we don't understand it. And then I get letters saying, I don't understand what I don't understand. And I should understand better what I don't understand. So so who knows? I've studied it a ton. And I still, the attraction to robo-advisors, I tend to agree with you guys that it's we like the pretty charts and graphs. We like the fact that a robot's doing it. Sounds pretty cool. Sexily sold. So who knows?
To me, the robo-advisor is the equivalent of this product that they showcased at the Las Vegas Consumer Electronics Show a few weeks ago. It was a smart, in quotation marks, garbage can. It's similar to the standard garbage can with a lid that you might have in your bathroom and that you activate with a pedal. But this newfangled and expensive one operates on the same principle, except you look in the vicinity of the garbage can and say, open, and it opens. How that's easier than using your foot, I have no idea. It's technology for the sake of technology.
Greg, dude, I love mine. It's awesome. Open.
Wait a minute. What if you are conversationally just saying the word open? Will it open every time?
I never got that far. I just missed it after the first paragraph.
Well, Greg, you know how many muscles you have to use to move that foot all the way over to that paddle and press down that hard? I mean, you could strain something.
I just don't like talking. This is the 1 hour a week that I talk. I keep my mouth shut the other 167. Ask Paula.
I was going to say, he's not kidding, folks. He's not kidding. Roger, you had something to add?
There are footless people in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Just saying.
Well, there's a market for everything. Number three here, everyone needs an emergency fund, not everyone. I don't even want to go into this one. Greg McFarland, what do you think about this? Oh, God. Oh, God.
You know, Joe, this might shock you, but I've actually come around on emergency funds.
No
I think
way.
That with a few thousand dollars in a purpose-built account, they can be an indispensable way to guard against who am I kidding? They're the worst piece of financial advice in existence.
The author
said it better than I could, because I've been trying for years to put it this succinctly. I consider our entire portfolio to be our emergency fund. Thank you. Done.
Just not, I don't agree at all. Roger Whitney, back me up here, man.
Oh, that is so wrong. That is so wrong. It is correct from a math standpoint. So I definitely agree with you from a math standpoint. The problem is that we're not rational people. And life happens. An emergency fund is like your financial airbag. It stops your financial face from hitting the window when life happens to you. And it happens to everybody. And in my practice, and he goes down to the cash reserves in retirement, it's an emotional game more than it is a math game. Now, for financial geeks, it's not, because they are very adverse to, you know, understand the math and are very disciplined. But for 99% of people, it's an emotional safety hatch that allows people to stay invested in and not make big mistakes, which, you know, studies show that almost all investors make big mistakes and sell when they're fearful. So that's one big reason why I think you need to have one.
But what if you don't have an emergency fund and the market's through the floor, and let's say, Greg, you don't have a job. So in terms of taking on more debt, you can't do that. What do you do then?
Well, I'm assuming we're already at the point where you've got a job. Feeding yourself is obviously going to be job one. Yeah. Once you get beyond that, then you can start worry about emergency fund and allocating elsewhere. What I want to know is, maybe I should be asking Roger this, what is an example of an unforeseen disaster that you can't defend against and have to have an emergency fund for? Your house catches fire, there's insurance.
Okay, well, so losing a job, right? So there's one. You can't build an emergency fund after you've lost a job.
Disability.
And disability. But a lot of it, I think, Greg, is that it's the emotional aspect of it. And I know, you know, with clients that are drawing money from retirement, we keep a lot of cash and we create a paycheck from that cash account to simulate like an income from a job. And this gives people the emotional freedom to allow the volatile assets to actually stay invested. And I agree with you 100% on the math end of it. I mean, you can use a HELOC, you can use all these different things. But when you're 60 years old and you pull the plug and you don't have a job, psychologically, you get real worried.
Paula's sitting back here with me just eating popcorn, listening to the... Paula, what do you think?
Yeah, I come down on the pro-emergency fund side of the argument.
But I get Greg's point. Do you get Greg's point?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. And I get the, I've read the argument that, you know, rather than have an emergency fund, figure out what 130% of that emergency fund would be and put that into investments. I've read that argument. And in one particular read of it, I see the logic there. But, a couple of things. Number one, your mental bandwidth is incredibly limited. And the number of things that you can worry about or focus on is any moment that you spend thinking about something is a moment that you're not spending thinking about something else. And so if you are in any way worried or held back by concerns about your ability to just meet your basic expenses, then you might be less likely to grow your business or take a risk in some other arena. And if you can offset that just by knowing that you've got 3 months worth of expenses parked somewhere. I mean, frankly, I see it as a little bit of an argument about pennies. Like, right, at the end of the day, 3 months worth of expenses is not that much money compared to what you could be earning or what you could be making through other areas of focus.
The fourth and fifth pieces in this article are very similar, so I think we'll attack them both at the same time. Number four is use bonds to diversify equity risk. He says, don't get your hopes up too high. And number five, bonds are safer than stocks. So Roger, we'll start with you. Do you think that you should use bonds to diversify equity risk, or is the writer correct here? And then do you also think bonds are not safer than stocks?
Sure. No, I think historically bonds actually do provide some value to the portfolio. Where I do agree now is it's almost you want to have a barbell approach, because you look at the Lehman bond aggregate, I guess it's the Barclays aggregate index, you know, the bond index. I think the yield's like 2.5%, and it has like a 6-7 year, you know, duration, which is interest rate risk. So by going more cash, you lose the 2.5% yield and you don't have any interest rate risk, because there's a lot of risk in bonds right now. And then on the other end of it, you have your equities. So yeah, bonds are a little difficult right now just because of where we're at in the cycle.
But historically, do you like bonds to some degree or not?
Yes, I do. And I disagree with them. So if you look at, again, the Lehman aggregate or the Barclays aggregate, you know, if we look at 10-year rolling period since 1950, they've averaged 6.5%, with the worst 10-year period still being a positive 1.6%. Now, when you factor in inflation, yeah, it's going to hurt you. But my sense is this guy's all in, all stocks all the time. No emergency fund, no bonds. Most people can't emotionally stay invested to get the returns that all these things promise because of all the volatility of what you might have to go through. So I think that's where the value, whether it's bonds or having higher cash positions, you're going to need to have something. other than just equities and things that are volatile.
Yeah, because Greg, that's where OG is on the show, is that he's all stocks all the time, but he's got that big cash reserve. So for people, especially, let's say that they're not working, he's got enough cash sitting around that he can take it from there. He's like, if I can just go cash and stock, then I don't need bonds at all. Are you on this train, all stock, no cash, no bonds, or what's the play?
I'm closer to that train than any other train. I'm rapidly approaching that track. I guess I'm on a spur, just because, I mean, if I believe in a company, I would rather have an equity position than worry about financing future endeavors. That being said, I can spew about this all I want. I will have to defer to Roger on this issue, who has obviously done his homework. But I will say, I could not do his job for 5 minutes. The moment I had a client start talking emotionally, I would kick him out of the office. <You don't.
laughs> I would love Roger, for somebody that hasn't met you before, to have Greg come to your office and we'll just install a hidden camera and have Greg be their advisor for 20 minutes and see if we can get him to cry before the 20 minutes is over.
I have some clients for him. I have some that I would just love to see.
Greg,
you would also get me to cry, because to do this, presumably I'd have to put on a jacket and a tie.
Wear a tie and wear a tire jacket.
Everybody's unhappy.
I don't have spiked hair either. So,
Paula, are you all stocks or bonds included?
You know what? I recently made the decision to go to all equities in my portfolio. So I am now all equities.
You like this idea then of equities and cash, like Roger's talking about?
I do. Yeah. I'm pro emergency fund. That's where my cash is. I also have just some cash reserves that sit in my checking account for basically just so I can automatically pay my credit card bill without having to worry about how much is in there. So that's just sheer laziness / automation. And then beyond that, everything that's actually invested is in equities. And the big reason for that is because, well, it's twofold. Number one, it's that I've quote unquote diversified by virtue of having rental properties. And so I know I'm getting cash flow from those rental properties. And so I view my retirement portfolio as kind of icing on the cake. So that's one piece of it. And then the other piece of it is looking into some of the historic data and seeing that even if I can't rebalance during, even if I can't sell off, stocks and bonds tend to move in inverse correlation to one another. And so the pro-bond argument that I had always heard is that when stocks are down, you can sell off some of those bonds and use it to buy stocks when they're cheap. That was the reason that I had any bonds to begin with. But I've recently been swayed by the notion that, you know what, even if you can't rebalance by virtue of having an all equities position, you will still, over the long term, have enough gains by virtue of having an all equities position that you'll be all right.
Yeah, that's, I think a lot of people are headed that way. And I think, to Roger's point, the current trend in bonds also makes it easier to have that position as well. I think we're going to leave the rest of this article alone. Looking ahead, his sixth point is cash serves as a great bear market insurance in retirement. We talked about that a little bit, and the fact that there are people that like that. He says, think again, and presents that argument. And then tax loss harvesting saves you a ton. He says it's nice, but it won't make you rich. So we'll have a link to that on our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. I got to take a quick time out from this awesome discussion with Roger Whitney, the retirement answer man, Paula Pant from Afford Anything, and Greg McFarlane from just about everywhere, from Investopedia and Control Your Cash, to talk a little bit about fintech. And this week, we're talking about Valentine's Day, coming up much more quickly than you might think. So it's the perfect time for you to swing into action and pretend like you're prepared for Valentine's Day. I know that if you're a freelancer, I'll tell you what's a great Valentine's Day, because if you are doing anything while you're listening to this, you're probably listening while you're wrapping up three different projects, you're prepping for a meeting, and you're also tackling a mountain of paperwork. That is life as a freelancer. Is it challenging? Well, yes, it is. But our friends at FreshBooks have the perfect Valentine's Day gift for you. They're going to make the reward so worth it. Because as you know, the working world has changed, and with the growth of the internet, there's never been more opportunities for the self-employed. So to meet this need, check this out. FreshBooks is excited to announce the launch of an all-new version of their cloud accounting software. Redesigned for the ground up and custom built for exactly the way you work, get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, more organized, and most importantly, to get paid quickly. All new FreshBooks is not only ridiculously easy to use, but it's packed with powerful features. Here's what you can do. You can create and send professional looking invoices in less than 30 seconds. I did one yesterday. It was so amazing. OG does our invoicing, but I was in there with him, showing him how things work, and just incredible. Set up online payments with just a couple clicks. Get paid up to 4 days faster. See when your client's seen your invoice. Put an end to the guessing games. FreshBooks is offering Stacky Benjamin's listeners, listen to this Valentine's Day gift, a 30-day unrestricted free trial. To claim it, here's what you got to do. Head to stackybenjamins.com/FreshBooks. stackybenjamins.com/FreshBooks. No spaces, just put it all together. FreshBooks. And that will take you to the trial page and her Stacky Benjamins in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thanks to FreshBooks for sponsoring Stacky Benjamins. All right, this is really cool. I first heard about Card Cash back in November. And at first I thought, you know, kind of like I talked about earlier, about when I was on Paula Pant show and we talked about the big things. I thought, oh, these coupon sites. In fact, it's funny, we even talked a little bit about Card Cash on her show on Monday. But I thought, this just doesn't make sense to me. And then I used it. So here's the deal with Card Cash. We do not endorse any of the names that are on our FreshBooks FinTech Friday segment, but I do like throwing you another one that I find compelling once a week. And this week it's Card Cash. So help me welcome from Card Cash, coming down to the basement, Eric Berger. And Eric Brandon from Card Cash joins us in the basement. Have a seat, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. So you got a favorite in the Super Bowl coming up in a couple of days. We got to ask you about that first.
Yeah, I think Atlanta's offense just has to, pull through this time. Plus, I'm also from New York, so I'm a Giants fan at heart. So I really can't vote for, New England. I just need to see them lose.
Are you a Yankee fan too then?
No, Mets, unfortunately. I take the pain.
No, yeah, right. Well, I was going to say, if you're a Yankee fan, then you hate Boston, you know, both, right?
But I think that anyone who's not in New England should hate New England.
They've won enough, Eric.
Yeah, they've all won enough, all those teams. There's just something about being from that area that just, you know, you just love to hate them.
Well, I got to tell you a game I won recently. I went to this this website that you might know a little bit about, cardcash.com.
I had to get
my parents some gift certificates, and it was super easy to use. But tell me this, where did the idea come from? Because I love these ideas about how companies start. Was it the founders were, looking for discounts themselves, or they saw a gap in the market? What happened?
It's actually a story, of lore around here, that it probably changes every year. But the story that I heard is that our founders, Elliot Bohm and Mark Ackerman, were just passing by a flyer. Somebody had posted that they had $500 worth of gift cards to I don't even know what brand anymore, and that they would take $400 or the next best offer. And the first thing that came to their head was, isn't there a website that does this? And they went online, they checked, they saw that there wasn't one, and they thought, well, we should make one. And 8 years later, here we are.
I love that, because we've all gotten gift certificates for stuff that, you're like, oh, thanks. I'm probably never going to go there.
Yeah, exactly. We look at it as a pretty good deal. We give people cash for stuff they don't want, and then we give it to people who want it, and they get to shop at a discount. It's a win-win on both sides.
Well, let's talk about how this works, because when I first heard of this about your site back in November, I had a ton of questions and actually had them all answered by going there and finding stuff out and then writing back and forth with you guys, which you are great about answering all of my questions. If I go to Card Cash and I'm looking for gift certificates, what happens? How does it work?
So there's two things that you can do on our site. You can either sell us a gift card or you can buy a gift card. If you're trying to sell us a gift card, we will make you an offer that's going to be less than the face value, let's say 85 cents on the dollar. And you can choose to take it or not, or use the card. We then go and sell that card at 90 cents on the dollar, and we make the spread. And the person that is coming to our site to buy it gets to save 10% on whatever store they want.
Got it. It is not always that price. It's going to depend on a lot of things. Because I noticed some companies, you save a lot of money. Some companies, you only save a little.
Yeah, so it is a marketplace. So different brands, people want more. So those are going to trade at some type of a premium. But on our site, you can save up to 35% right now. So it really just, you know, depends on which brand you really want.
The big question that I had is, when you guys buy these gift cards, how do you know that they're real? Because as an example, we've all heard the stories about people buying tickets on eBay, and then they get the ticket and they present it at, let's say, the big game that's this Sunday, and it turns out that the ticket was a fake. How are you able to verify that this is a real certificate?
Well, I can't give you, the secrets to the sauce, but we have our own, a software that really checks where the card has come from, if there's a balance, just to make sure that everything is good. We even vet the seller to make sure that he is a upstanding, charactered person. But there are some cards that sometimes are bad, but with that, we have a 45-day guarantee where if anything happens to the balance of that card within that time frame, we will instantly give you a refund and make sure that everything is taken care of.
It's funny because I went and talked around about you guys and I couldn't find a story. And there must be a story somewhere, obviously, because you just mentioned that you guys do have the guarantee, but I couldn't, I guess it doesn't happen that often is my point.
It does not. If it did happen that often, we probably wouldn't have the good name that we do.
Right. And how many different retailers do you have up there at any given time?
On our site at any given time, we probably have around 700. We accept over 1,300 right now. So any brand in the U.S. that has more than 30 stores, we carry their brand.
You obviously find then that some are hotter than others.
Yes, we do. It's all about a marketplace. There's, a supply and demand, and the prices reflect that.
I was surprised, Eric. When I first went there, I thought it's going to be a gift card. I'm sending this to my parents, right? I wanted to send them dinner and a movie. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to have it sent to their house. And surprise, surprise, this was an electronic gift. What percentage of these are electronic where you don't have to wait for the gift card to come in the mail?
Yeah, about 75% of our business is what we call a digital code. It's much faster to get. You place an order, you can have the card within a couple of minutes. People want speed, and I think that's the best part of the value. It's you don't have to wait for the card to come to your house. If you are about to go shop at a store and you want to save some money, you just place an order 10 minutes before, come straight to your email, you walk into the store, use the card right away.
Yeah, I'm looking. There's even grocery stores on here. So if I'm headed to the grocery store, I get an instant discount.
Yeah, we have all different types of brands, all different stores. People use it for their usual grocery shopping. You could use it for whatever you want, movies, clothing, food.
Well, so Valentine's Day coming up, as you know, any brands that people should be focused in on, you think, for this big holiday?
Yeah, actually, last year we ran a contest for people to write in and tell us some pretty good tales of, how they, use the cards. And we actually had a guy write in that he used our discount at Tiffany's to buy his girlfriend a ring. And then proposed to her in Disney World, also saving money with our cards.
That's a pretty romantic story.
Yeah, it is pretty good. So, if I was going to point anybody in the right direction, jewelry usually, is a good sell.
Yeah, and for guys too. But, there's some guys that like sporting goods stuff, and I'm seeing some of that on here.
Oh, yeah, we got plenty of that, especially with, the Super Bowl. We actually have a lot of cards for that. Sports apparel, sports stores, NFL shop. You can even use cards to get tickets to a game on our site.
And I'm not, by the way, saying that just guys like sporting goods, because we have plenty of women in the audience that love sporting goods too. And there's even some sporting goods companies here that are specifically geared toward women. I mean, everything.
Our website, it's pretty split down the middle, 50-50 when it comes to men and women. I guess everybody likes to save money. It doesn't make a difference.
You brought up selling gift cards, and I want to get back to that for a second, Eric. If I've got this gift card, I don't want it. Go through the process with me of selling it to you. How does that work?
Process is pretty easy. Go to cardcash.com, click on sell a gift card. You just type in some information, including how much is on the card, the brand. We will tell you how much we will give you. Let's say it's a $100 card. We'll give you $85.
Is that, Eric, I'm sorry to cut you off, but is that instantly? Yeah, no problem. Do I find that out instantly, or do you go check out the card first?
You'll find out right away how much we will pay for it. And then if you want to go further, then you will add in all of that type of information.
Got it.
But you first find out exactly what the price is.
Got it. Okay. So that's immediate. You know what you can get for it, so you know if it's worth your time to even do.
Exactly. We're not trying to waste anybody's time. We're just trying to save them money.
And then how long does it take you guys to check out the card and make sure everything's on the up and up?
We tell people that we process orders within 24 hours. Usually it can be faster, but that's the going time, right?
Awesome. And the site is cardcash.com. And if you're like me and you're looking for discounts for Valentine's Day, this is a good place to start. Thanks for hanging out, Eric.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.
As you heard, I told Eric, super easy to use. Got my parents their gifts. I will be using this myself for Valentine's Day. And once again, that's not it. We're not endorsing these companies. We're just throwing them out there. But this one I have used and really enjoyed it. All right, let's get back to this, shall we? Back to our fantastic money discussion with Greg McFarlane from Control Your Cash and Investopedia, Paula Pant from Afford Anything, and Roger Whitney, the Retirement Answer Man from the Retirement Answer Man podcast. Our second piece comes to us from Kiplinger, and this is how to treat your heirs fairly. It says to avoid any bad blood among siblings, trying to decipher your will after death, explain your decisions while living. First, the first thing I want to ask about Roger Whitney is this idea of treating your heirs fairly. Is there some rule that you have to treat your heirs fairly?
I don't know. I don't think there is a rule. And I know some families that don't, but I think it's definitely what people feel they are supposed to do, because who wants to, kick a hornet's nest? Who wants to let that all go crazy? So I see most people doing it, even if they sort of, bite their tongue while they do it, just to avoid conflict.
But Greg, you're dead. You don't care anymore, do you?
I almost wish I had kids just so I could leave more to one than the other and let them spend the rest of their lives guessing why. But seriously, if you have a kid who's a disaster and you're honest enough to acknowledge it, why wouldn't you cut them off?
Yeah, no, I don't get that either. But talking about money ahead of time and kind of where everything's buried, I think that piece is important, talking to kids about your estate plan ahead of time. Would you be uncomfortable with that, Greg, if you had kids?
It's funny. In the half of my family where you can actually trace the lineage and the people sort of talk to each other, on the maternal side, my grandmother died and then my grandfather died like a year later. In that 1 year period, I might have mentioned this before, two kids, my mother and my uncle, who was and is a violent moron who could never hold a job. My grandfather sat down with him and my mother and said, okay, let's talk about who gets what. And my mother said, no, this is gruesome. I feel like a vulture. I'm not going to do this while you're still alive.
Oh,
I think my uncle said pretty much the same thing. And sure enough, okay, so my grandfather said, fine, well, if you're not going to help me, I'll do this. So he ends up now getting way too deep in the story, but my grandparents either took pity on my uncle or felt some sort of obligation because they let him and his family live free in their rental house for basically 20 years. So my grandfather dies, and then here comes the will. My mother got the bulk of the estate, I guess, as a way of evening things out because they never put a roof over her head once she reached adulthood. And as an aside, most of what they left her was crap that she never sold that I ended up having to deal with when she died 30 years later, but that's beside the point.
Dolls!
Dolls and movie star autographs.
No, Roger doesn't know this story, but Greg sold dolls to my neighbor.
Really?
Yeah, so porcelain dolls. Talk about small world. Anyway, I'm sorry, Greg.
No, go right ahead. There were these terrifying 4 foot tall. These were not Barbie dolls. These were keep you awake in your nightmares dolls. Right. But apparently there's a market for this kind of thing. And one of the premier dealers in all of the country, all of North America, lives down the street from Joe.
So. How about that, huh?
Of course he does.
There's amazing people in Texarkana. Right.
But anyhow, this asymmetrical will caused a lot of resentment and then rekindled more resentment a generation later between my mother's side and my family and my uncle's side. But who the hell cares? Bottom line, don't have kids and give your money to Best Friends Animal Society when you die instead.
That is a much safer, much cleaner way to go. Paula, how about if your parents sat you down and said, here's the way we're splitting up the estate, would that freak you out or would you kind of want to know ahead of time?
I, I would want to know that ahead of time, because after someone has passed away, you basically, you don't know what their intentions were, and you're left guessing. And so there's kind of two aspects to this. Yeah, there's the financial aspect, but then there's also the emotional aspect. What does this mean? Why did they do it? Why did they make those decisions? And it's better to have those conversations early so that you can't project some intention onto somebody that was never there.
If your parents set up in a state where you got the money a little at a time, because people like Roger and when I was an advisor would sometimes, you know, we'd meet with clients with an estate attorney, and the attorney would tell them to give them a little bit money maybe when they're 18, and then more when they're 25, more when they're 30, so that you have a chance to maybe mature. If your parents mm-hmm. had passed away and you were getting these dribbles of money, would you feel like they were ruling you from beyond the grave? Would that seem outrageous, or would you just kind of think that that's probably the best thing they could have done?
No, I wouldn't think that was outrageous at all. I think that's a fantastic idea. I mean, when people are given money that they haven't necessarily worked or worked for or earned, sometimes there's easy come, easy go. And by virtue of spreading that money out, you can save them from themselves.
Roger, what's the most creative thing you've seen a client do without naming any, obviously without naming any names of clients? Anybody get really creative with their estate plan?
No, actually they don't. Most people, I mean, the vast majority really aren't leaving that much. They all want to die. They're just trying to live their lifestyle. And tell you what I encourage them to do when they think they're going to have too much money at the end. What a great problem to have, right? Is, look, why don't you take that money and invest in them now so you can participate and create memories rather than leave cash? I mean, my grandmother died a couple years ago, and about a year and a half later, after it was all settled, I got a small check. And that's not personal. It didn't make me think of my grandmother. Whereas taking money and paying for college or taking everybody on major trips and creating memories is going to be a heck of a lot better way than leaving a check. But no, I have had clients kick one of their sons out of their house, though. And that was interesting. I had to help evict somebody.
Like when they died, they kicked them out?
No, while they're living, it was like a deadbeat son. And you know what, when that estate happens, I can't think of what it is on the top of my head, but it's probably going to be split equally, even though one's a deadbeat son and the other one is, you know, pretty responsible.
I'm just wondering, you're the financial planner. Why the hell are you involved in evicting their kid? Like, that seems like, and then I wash their dishes and I fed the cat.
Because what I do is so much more, is so much emotional as it is dollars, is coaching people through and saying, this person's taking advantage of you. But I do think it is important to tell people.
I thought you were going to say you were a deputy marshal.
Right. I'm a.
Well, I was thinking, Greg, that's the part of the job you could be very good at.
Yeah, we'll hire him out.
Good for tips.
You can be the bouncer, the deadbeat son bouncer.
All right, good stuff there, Roger. Anything else?
No, that's it. That's all I got.
All right. Well, because I cut you off there, so I feel bad. But. Good. You know, I think this last article we're going to walk away from, we'll do this next time, but let's wrap this baby up by finding out what's going on where you live. Greg, I guess all we need from you today then, sir, is the weather report.
79 and sunny and 20% chance of rain tomorrow in the Napili Hanakawai residential district here on the west side of sunny Maui.
Man, what do you do when that happens?
You go to the beach.
Paula, what's going on at Afford Anything?
At Afford Anything, I will be taking listener questions. So we'll be doing a couple of, actually two episodes of Ask Paula, because we've got a bit of a backlog of questions piling up. So
those are fun, aren't they?
Yeah, I like them. I get to basically state my opinion into the air, and that's nobody right. Nobody can object.
Right. Arrah. And then Roger Whitney, thanks for hanging out with us again, man.
You bet. We have a... Retirement Plan Live, the third annual, starting here in a week or so, where we're going to create a retirement plan live on the podcast with a listener.
Awesome. The listener agrees to, let me see if I got this right. They agree. They get a financial plan from you for free as long as you're allowed to broadcast it.
Yeah, we change their name and we change some of the financial details. And we go through most of the engagement and I record all the episodes and we play them on the podcast. And then have a live webinar where we reveal the plan and we reveal whether they can actually retire or not.
You should just
a lot of stress there.
You should just have Greg sit in on some of those.
Yeah, he can be the hammer if they can't.
Greg, you wouldn't have to wear a tie. How great would that be?
But you got to lure me back to the mainland, though. Right. Wait till it gets warmer.
All right. Thanks for playing, guys.
Thank you.
Back to the tables, Paula.
Exactly.
Oh, that's going to put a cap on the week. And what a great week it was, wasn't it? On Monday, Martin Small from iShares. If you don't know much about iShares, you want to go back and listen to that show. On Wednesday, Joe Gagliano. What a story about the great. And I wish I've read even more of his book since Wednesday's show. And if you're interested at all in the dirty underbelly of gambling and how that stuff works and manipulation, it's creepy. It's bad. Obviously, Joe said over and over it was bad. I thought it was amazing how he could tell me how cheaters would do stuff on Wednesday. Just absolutely fascinating. Joe Gagliano's book, No Gray Areas. And then, of course, today, what a fun discussion. Hey, we always put a cap on our week by playing this little game. I have a game I play when OG is not here with me in the basement. So we will continue that today. In fact, today, we might have enough information that you can get it all. I think somebody's going to guess it this week. But before we get to that, got to say a big thank you to everybody who's gone to StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. Because when you head to Magnify Money, what you'll find is that checking account you have, not so much. That savings account you've got could be a lot better. And those debt products, like Nick over at Magnify Money says, if you don't have a reward card that's giving you 2% cash back, you're leaving money on the table because, like he says, they're all over, easy to get. You head to Magnify Money, you can find the best ones. What I like about Magnify Money is that they show you how much fine print baloney you're going to have to go through. And I always pick, when I go to Magnify Money, I pick the spots that don't have a lot of fine print because I don't have time for that. So StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. When you go there, you will find that if, especially if you're looking at your student loans, but also for personal loans and for mortgages, head to SoFi, StackyBenjamins.com/SoFi will get you there. Student loan refinancing, how does it work? Well, they will find your rate in 2 minutes. They save you money on student loans. It's kind of their thing. Members who refinance with them save an average of, get this, $288 a month and $22,359 over the life of their loan. SoFi is one of the few lenders that handles federal and private student loan consolidation. Plus, as a member, they're going to give you access to a whole lot of perks, career strategy services, customer support 7 days a week, invites to SoFi events, and more. StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. And once again, it's not just student loans, also personal loans and mortgages. All right, let's play our game, shall we? For those of you new to the game, here is what we do. Every Friday, we play a game at the end of the show. In different games, we have kind of obfuscated the clues. How about that for the million-dollar word, huh? And not tell you what the clues are. In this particular game, I'm just giving you the clue here at the end of the week. So here's the deal. You, from these clues, figure out the answer. The answer's over the number of weeks, and this will be week number 5. So you got to go back 4 weeks ago, listen to the last 4 podcasts, and then this one, and you'll have all 5 of the answers, because all 5 of those answers are forming a new clue. So then you'll have to tell me what I'm looking for from this series of answers. All right, that's the way you play. So today, everybody ready? Somebody's going to get it this one. And by the way, if you get it within 24 hours of the first person, I may have even changed that a couple times, but that's the way we're going to roll now. If you feel like NASCAR, where I'm changing the rules constantly, if you answer the first 24 hours of the first person, we're going to put your name in the hat to win. If you've won in the last 6 months, you're not eligible to win this one. All right. The final clue. I say it's final. Might not be final, but I think it probably is. Here we go. This is a loner, a monad, a leader, confidence, the bull, the sun, and hydrogen all wrapped up into one. There it is. We'll see everybody next week. Go Stacks and Benjamins.
Special thanks to Eric Berger from Card Cash. You can find out more about them at cardcash.com. or through our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. Paula Pant appears courtesy of affordanything.com. Special thanks to Greg McFarland for unwittingly being the guy everybody loves to hate. He's kind of like our version of George Costanza. Big thanks to Retirement Answer Man Roger Whitney for joining us on today's show. You'll find the Retirement Answer Man podcast wherever finer podcasts are distributed. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul Sehi, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor.
Wait! Where are you going? I was going to make espresso.